Hello, hey, ifte. Ude uye ikspe igpe atinle. Au hey, arye uye.
A good day.
Udge.
Oh my goodness. You speak Pig Latin very well.
Fabankyaboo. The batab is for Barabinabice.
Whoa. Did you major in this or something? Are there classes to take to learn Pig Latin like this?
Etzle ise igpe atinle at a universite. I was doing Pig Latin and Horse Latin at the same time. I was trying to say, let's see Pig Latin at the University of, and I didn't know what to say, like Orkpe, the University of Pork.
Wait, there's a Horse Latin?
Yeah. So with Pig Latin, for anybody who doesn't know, you basically take the first consonant of the word and you tack it on the end of the sentence and you add A-Y. So
you mean at the end of the word?
Sorry, yes, at the end of the word, not at the end of the sentence. That'd be confusing.
Whoa.
So that's like, in the case of Pig Latin, that'd be igpe atinle. With Horse Latin, you add a B sound after every consonant. So that would be, if I was saying Pig Latin in Horse Latin, I would say pabig labatabin.
You are a multilingual animal Latine.
I like it. Yes, I guess I see, you know, normally I would not say I'm bilingual or trilingual, but I guess I do have a couple animal.
You have some extra linguals in there for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, give me something in Horse Latin.
Let's see. Mabake tabu abizabe vaberabi gabud pabad kabast about vaberabi abintrabistabing abart thabings.
Whoa. Can you say today's episode we're talking about the convict?
Yes. Tabeza bepabasabod wabiabar tabakabing about the bee kabonvabict.
Now, can you do that in Pig Latin?
Yes. A day's te episode a ewe arye awking te about a ethe onvict k.
It seems like you're more fluid in the Horse Latin than the Pig Latin.
I am. In fact, in middle school, I learned Horse Latin, and my friends and I would talk exclusively in Horse Latin when we were together. So it's like that rolls off the tongue. Whereas with Igpe
Atinle, yes, it totally rolls off the tongue. That's right. You're 100% on that.
Yeah, it's so easy. But Igpe Atinle is a harder hay. Pig Latin is harder, is what I just said.
So for those of you who don't speak Pig Horse Latin, today we're discussing season 3, episode 9 of The Office, The Convict, originally airing on November 30th, 2006. We don't always say it out that clear what we're doing, but I kind of like it. Kind of grounds me.
I do too. Yeah, it lays the base that we need at the beginning, especially after the nonsense that sometimes takes place before that.
This office had 0 days, no nonsense, right? Like, what was it?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I messed that one up.
There have been 0 days since the last nonsense.
Anyway, but I like this episode. It isn't as dense as some of our previous episodes. We have a more solid through line, I guess, mm-hmm. with like a little bit of side stuff here and there, but it's very focused on what is going on in the office right now with some of the new people. Mm-hmm. And it turns out one of them has spent some time in the clink.
So this episode, I think, is an episode that not only establishes new characters come and sort of the dynamic of those new characters as they become a part of Scranton, but it also is helping kick the characters out the door that are not supposed to be, you know, an ongoing part of the show.
It is. It's like we have this giant sieve and we're like shaking it, and like a couple of characters who just aren't going to pan out or are slowly falling through those little holes and just disappearing into the ether. Poof.
Goodbye.
It was nice knowing you for 2 episodes.
Iye use. That's see you. So this, I like this episode for several reasons. One, it's got one of my favorite scenes in all of The Office, which is Prison Mike.
I'm Prison Mike.
But also, I think that it touches on what one would call possibly like either subversive racism or it's ignorant racism. It's racism without realizing it's racism and also kind of thinking that it's not. And that's where Michael is in this episode, because he's like trying to be a good guy, but he doesn't realize how bad he's being about it.
Why did the convict have to be a black guy? It is such a stereotype. I just wish that Josh had made a more progressive choice, like a white guy who went to prison for polluting a black guy's lake.
And the first sign of him still not quite getting it is when he says to Kevin,
"You're such a racist."
Wait, why am I a racist?
Because you think he's black.
He is black.
It's so good. It's such a good line. It's like, damn it, Michael, you were so close. You almost got it.
It's such a good line because it highlights that, like, you don't have to be blind to what people look like,
right,
in order to not be racist. Like,
right, exactly.
It's about making assumptions. It's not about pretending they don't look like the way they look like.
Because you think he's black. And poor Kevin's like, what do you mean? Like, he is black.
It is like, it's a slip of the lip that Michael had, but at the same time, that's exactly what he meant.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, and that's the thing, is that at the base of it, he still isn't, like, he's trying to be better, and his, you know, his words and his, and maybe some of his actions are, you know, becoming more developed, mm-hmm. but that's sort of like, what, like a Freudian slip in a way, like at the base of his brain, he's still got work he needs to do.
Michael's reaction to this knowledge seems so good.
What we need to do is to forget about this whole Martin in prison thing. People will draw unfair conclusions about Martin and or black people.
Cool.
Okay. Angela?
Sure.
Let's protect the convicts.
And at first I'm like, that's kind of the right thing to do, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, am I wrong in feeling that? Because that's, I was like, he did a good job there. If that's where it ended.
Yes.
In that conference room with the few people that were involved, and that was the conclusion it came to, and everyone moved on. That kind of felt like the right thing to do, especially coming from someone like Michael, who in the past has displayed a lot worse knowledge about this than he was displaying in this moment.
This opens up an interesting sort of conflict in the office that doesn't even have to do with race as much, but just treating someone as dangerous because at one point they were, you know, convicted of a felony.
Not all felonies are dangerous acts.
Exactly, exactly. And it is still a huge stigma in the United States, and it does lead to these kinds of things. And, you know, Jan calls it out as being like a smart move, because essentially the government is like, hey, we've got this person who went to prison, and he, you know, for a felony offense, whatever it happens to be, we don't know yet, but he is reformed. He's, you know, gone to prison. He's done his thing. He got out on time, like no violent acts while he was in prison. And so we consider him to be reformed. And so the government says, hey, company, in this case, Dunder Mifflin, we will offer you some money if you will hire felons underneath this program, because that helps them get back into the workforce, helps them continue to be reformed instead of essentially like getting kicked out into society and not knowing what they're doing and failing. So this is a good, you know, Jan calls it a good move by Josh Porter. Yes, the company makes money because they've hired Martin, but it's also good for the employee because Martin, you know, if we assumed that it was a violent thing, like he's not just getting kicked out and sort of like getting put back in a situation where that could happen again.
Yeah, he's not getting pigeonholed by a label that was given to him without any delineation of exactly what was done.
Precisely.
We eventually find out.
He's Martha Stewart.
He is Martha Stewart.
You all want to know what I was in for?
No, that's not cool. You don't have to tell them.
I really don't mind. It was a stupid mistake. Yeah. I was working in finance, and I got involved in some insider trading. So I spent a little time in the clink.
He offers it up himself, right? He says, this is why I'm in jail. He puts it out there basically instead of, to stop everyone from wondering and gossiping. And I think that that's a smart way to do it, especially after Michael, of course, like, oh, Michael decides after his big speech, I'm jumping all over the place here, but after his big speech, Michael of in there and saying like, oh, we're not going to say anything. We're going to be cool about this. Yes, Michael, this is great. That is, you are being a boss. This is great. He goes out and he tells Dwight and then he tells everybody. And like, he is the one that leaks it all over the place, of course. But so we see Martin kind of putting it out there. Hey, I was in prison for insider trading. And everyone starts asking questions. And I love the confessional that we have with Kevin.
I had Martin explain to me 3 times what he got arrested for, because it sounds an awful lot like what I do here every day.
You could take it as, oh, it's Kevin being kind of a dum-dum and thinking that accounting is insider trading. Or you can go with the really fun fan theory that Kevin is embezzling the entire time.
It's one of the key pieces of evidence to prove that Kevin might be, you know, purposely embezzling and sort of didn't know what he was doing, but was making money
every day.
Our B plot is Andy basically looking for a lady and Jim helping him. And as we know, Jim, whenever he's annoyed by someone, he doesn't just get annoyed. He helps them by pranking them. And in the crossfire of pranking Andy, he decides to prank Pam, which we never
so
really
cute.
See him pranking Pam directly before. But now they are. And I love every moment of this because Jim knows Pam very well, as he displays in a confessional.
I know Pam pretty well. I know the things that she likes. And just as important, I know the things that she hates.
He puts Andy over to her saying like all the wrong things.
Pamela Ding Dong. So I don't know if you like country music, but I was thinking maybe one of these days we could drive out to a field, crank up some tunes, smoke a few Macanudos, maybe even toss a disc around. Utwe ude uye inkthe ampe.
And Pam's face during Andy's wooing of her is absolutely wonderful because she's just left speechless.
Wow. That was wow.
And she knows that all of that information came from Jim, because where else would it have come from? It was just too perfect. And every time you see her interacting with Andy throughout this episode, she has this grin on her face that you know is meant for Jim. And I love that. And then we get these wonderful clips of Jim. Oh, man, Micah, one of my very favorite Jim moments ever. Has no words. It is
after. I know exactly what you're talking about because it's my favorite thing too.
Oh my God, it's so good.
When he spins the chair slowly and then he like looks at her. Yes.
And he doesn't look at her and he's spinning and his hands on his chin, his fingers on his chin, and he spins around and he looks his eyes up. It's so well timed and it's so funny. That sight gag is burned into my brain and it is my favorite Jim look moment interaction with him and Pam ever.
Their silent communication is fantastic.
It just gets better and better and deeper and deeper.
That's what she said.
Ew.
Monkey wrench, moving along.
Thanks. We get a little monkey wrench by the name of Karen coming in, and she kind of asks to be involved in the prank.
Awkward. Sorry.
It is awkward. It's the perfect way to put it because it's so playful and innocent and something you would totally do with your boyfriend or someone you're dating or like have a relationship with. But it feels really weird. And I really appreciate Jim's reaction to this because he recognizes that Karen's involvement in pranking Pam would be very hurtful to Pam.
Yeah, it wouldn't be healthy. It wouldn't be right. It would feel bad and like not from a good place.
Right. Jim's doing it from a good place. He's doing it out of love and friendship and in a really funny way and in a not hurtful way. Mm-hmm. But I feel like if Karen got involved, that would just turn things sour. And Jim recognizes that. And he doesn't say it. He doesn't make Karen feel bad. He doesn't make anyone feel bad. Like he moves it wrong. He's like, oh, let's stick Andy on someone else. You know, like just really cool. I really appreciate Jim in that moment. And I feel like he's very thoughtful and attentive to, he's very empathetic. And
yes.
And I love that.
Well, and I would say too, like, I think that he knows, you know, it doesn't matter, even if her pranks were super innocent and just a, you know, silly, funny thing, and there was no sort of malice to them, just in and of itself, him working with Karen to prank Pam would just be like, it just feels wrong on its mm-hmm. face.
Yes.
And so it doesn't even matter if Karen was just like looking to have fun and, you know, participate with this guy that she likes. It's just like at its heart, at its base, there's no way that could go, that it wouldn't be hurtful. And so I appreciate, you know, Jim for sort of stopping that and not making that a thing.
So we get into the main meat of the episode is when the office kind of starts rallying around Martin because he's telling them all of these seemingly wonderful things that happened in jail.
Yeah, like he got to take some business classes. He's able to go outside and like have a day out. There's like a big television in the main room where they were.
It's almost like they wrote in something for everybody, right? They had like yes. the art for Pam. They had the business classes for Ryan. They had the outside time that everyone's like feeling that they would want. And
yeah, Stanley, of course, like being away from work, doing anything other than work. So that would be a good one for him.
Is it just me or is Stanley doing a crossword puzzle this entire episode?
It is not just you.
So after the office kind of rallies around Martin saying how awesome prison sounds and how terrible working at Dunder Mifflin sounds compared to prison, that prison is so much better. Michael tries a series of tactics to convince them otherwise because he thinks they're serious.
You know what? Michael is here to scare you straight.
I am here to scare you straight.
So Michael comes into, you know, it's time. It's conference room time.
Before even conference room time, he takes everyone outside in the freezing cold.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. He does. He takes everybody outside the freezing cold.
For He's their like, outdoor
you
time.
All want to try some outdoor time? We'll do this. Michael pulls out his 2.5 pound dumbbell and he's like, I'm going for tone, not bulk. With a 2.5 pound dumbbell. But then they're all just like, we want to go back inside. And they like run back inside. So they get back inside. And I love like the meeting starts with just Michael being Michael. But he turns around, dons this purple bandana, and turns into Prison Mike.
I'm Prison Mike.
And so Prison Mike is supposed to be this person that has been to prison and can talk about all the bad things that happened to him while he was there.
Talk.
Yeah, you would know better than me the New York accent.
The accent he puts on is so terribly, wonderfully bad.
Into clink. You, my friend, would be de Bella de Ball.
Stop it, Michael.
Yes. So this is one of my favorite just like characters, I guess, in The Office and scenes. And again, the sort of back and forth between, we've talked before about conference room back and forths. They like build Michael up and keep asking him all these questions. And it's like almost too fast for him. And so he gets to the point where he's talking about Harry Potter and he mentions like Dementors. And it's just so funny because he can't like come up with something quick enough. So he just comes up with the fact that there are Dementors in prison.
Right. And that he kidnapped the president's son, but he got away with it. But yet he's in prison. It's like everyone has learned at this point that we're in season three. And in the beginning, at first, it was a lot of eye rolling. And then we kind of moved on up to snarky comments. And now we're like full on encouraging Michael. They're just saying like, you know what? We're going to be stuck in here no matter what. We might as well kind of play along. And so everyone starts asking him these ridiculous questions, getting him to answer it because they're like, this is happening to us regardless. And we can either feel suffering that we are sitting back and waiting for it to be finished, or we can participate and have a little bit of fun with him. And I really like that it's taken kind of that turn and everyone participates and is mocking him, and not just mocking him in his language, but now they are actively encouraging these characters. And it's a really funny, great group dynamic scene that we have here. And it kind of ends in Michael getting very frustrated and locking everybody in the office because he doesn't recognize that they are playing a joke on him.
Right.
Like all of the jokes that Michael has tried to play on everyone in the past, he doesn't recognize when jokes are happening to him. He takes it very seriously.
And personally.
And it takes Toby to break him out of that and tell him, no, they're joking with you. They're not serious.
Michael, why is everyone locked in the conference room?
They were very disrespectful to me and to the office. And Martin has had a bad influence.
You know they're teasing you. I mean, obviously this is a much nicer place than an actual prison. We get paid to be here. We go home afterwards and have social lives. And we have parties here. They're teasing you. It'd be funny.
And finally, he like believes something that Toby says. It's very rare that he ever wants to hear anything Toby has to say.
He actually listens to Toby's advice. It's probably the first and only time this ever happens in the entire series.
One of the things that's hilarious to me is Michael's handling of the situation, which is to lock them in. That's just so funny to me. He doesn't know what to do. And so he's like, well, you know what? Now you're in prison. And that's like, it's just so wrong. You can't do that. And he doesn't care. He does it anyway. And it's hilarious that like, that's his way of handling things. And
it's kind of like, it's funny as a parent, I have to say, I understand that kind of frustration when your kids are pushing the buttons so much that sometimes you just freak out and you're like, well, fine, I'm just going to leave you at the park. Like, you know, and it's a yes. threat and it's not really, no one's in danger. Like it's not, but I can almost understand where Michael just boiled over. He was getting so frustrated because what he was trying to teach them wasn't getting through, and all they were doing was joking back at him, and he thought they were serious because there was just no communication, and he just loses it. And I completely understand that. I've totally lost it before, and I think almost everybody has had one of those moments of totally losing it. So it's almost like you can sympathize, but he's losing it for the wrong reasons.
And in not the right setting. Yeah. One of my favorite moments with this, I don't know why I'm so obsessed with Hannah Smoot Ridge Bar, but I am. And they're all like trying to get out of the conference room, and Kevin was knocking at the door, and Hannah just shushes him. And she goes back to like pumping or like feeding her baby. Oh yeah, that's right. She
rocking brought the baby, her baby to sleep. Work.
Yeah, and she's like,
yeah,
my baby's
a
sleeping.
Whole another thing about this baby. Oh my goodness.
Hannah Smoot Ridge Bar is just an enigma wrapped in a blanket.
Pink blanket.
Nonsense. And I adore that character for her brief stint at the office.
That is so funny that you attach to this rando lady. Like, she's so...
I don't even know why. It's the name, I think. I'm obsessed with that name. Hannah Smoot Ridge Bar. Like, whose family that is a producer of the show has the last name Smoot Ridge - Bar? Or like if there's a similar name. I'm just wondering like where that name came from. It's just so good. It sounds like such like an average person name, but also I could totally see a Hannah Smoot Ridge Bar being kind of mean, like Hannah Smoot Ridge Bar is. It just all makes sense.
I think of it, it connects my brain to Parks and Recreation with that reporter. What was the reporter's name?
Oh, right.
She also had a really interesting and funny hyphenated name.
Oh, you're right.
Mulway Tweep.
Yes, Hannah Mulway Tweep.
Oh, is it both Hannah's?
Oh, no. I think it is. No, wait, let me see. I'm looking it up now. Oh, it's Shauna. Shauna.
I thought it came to me right as you were reading it.
Shauna Mulway Tweep.
I bet you they know each other. They're part of the same sorority.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, definitely. Definitely step in and out of it like that.
So, as we learn that this office is the American dream.
You got a good life.
You got a good life. A good life.
This episode felt short to me.
Okay, well, let me say this. So in watching it, I didn't feel it was short, but in reading like back, there's not a whole lot of content to it. I think it's because it's so focused on just these two plots. There's not a whole lot of extra going on. And, you know, the nonsense that happens is mostly with the main plot. And that secondary plot doesn't have a whole lot. You know, we see maybe three bits of story for the Andy and Jim deal, but the rest of it is this one story. And so in telling the one story, it does kind of make it feel shorter.
I'm looking at the timestamps now, and I believe the last two that we have watched together, they went a little long because they were the director producer cuts. And this one doesn't seem to be a producer director cut. So we're kind of back to that 21, 22 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah, because the episode ends with a really great Michael monologue about Martin.
Martin went from being a new guy from Stanford to the convict, to my friend, back to a convict, then to kind of a nuisance, actually, if we can be completely honest. And finally to a quitter. And I will not miss him. And that is not because he is black.
Is there anything else that we want to touch on before we give out our Dundee?
No, I think that covers it. I mean,
who brings a baby to work? Number one.
Yeah. Who during the workday and also like doesn't do any work at all. And just, Hannah Smotridge Barr, let me tell you.
All right. What's our Dundee this week, Prison Micah?
Well, the Dundee this week is called the What Are You Thinking Award. And it goes to friend of the show, Dan Sturm. For those who don't know, Dan Sturm helped me when I was creating the artwork for the show to properly render the shadows that are behind that little sign,
Like
the black sign. And so, yeah, he had a hand in helping me create the show artwork. So shout out there. But he's been watching The Office through.
I love that he didn't get a Dundee for that.
Yeah, right. That was in the beginning before we were giving Dundees to people. We should have given him one at the time. But he has been watching The Office through, and whenever he was first watching it, I asked him who his favorite character was, and he didn't know yet. And since then, he tweeted at me to tell me that his favorite character from The Office is Robert California. And I'm handing him, this is me personally, I'm handing him the What Are You Thinking Award, because I feel that is a really bad opinion.
I disagree, because I love me some Robert California. So I disagree.
Tell me why. Why?
Because I love James Spader. I just have a thing for James Spader. So he can play anything and I'm going to love it. And him, who I love, being in the show that I love, it was just, it's twinkling stars, firework magic for me. I absolutely love it. So this is from Micah only Dundee. I also like that you put an Interrobang in the award title, which I hope will show up on the award art.
That'll definitely be on the award. Yes.
I love a good use of an Interrobang.
Yes. And, you know, few and far between, but when they come up, they're good. Dan, do go ahead and get on up here and accept your Dundee.
Yeah. Well, no, look, I disapprove of the Dundee. I approve of his pick.
I understand. And here's what I'll say, too. Like, I was talking to my partner last night about this as I was lamenting, as the tweet like came in fresh. I was lamenting that Dan decided that his favorite character is this character that I don't like. And he sort of challenged me on my dislike of the character. And when I think about it, here's how I feel about Robert California. Because I don't really know James Spader. Like, that doesn't mean anything to me. He's just Robert California in the show. I will say that Robert California as an entity is an incredible role. It is incredibly well done. He, like, is very good at being that sort of enigmatic kind of Elon Musk-y type character.
It is musky, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very musky. But what I don't like is Robert California with, like, if there's a gigantic painting and it is the whole of The Office, see all 9 seasons of The Office, and I look and I see Robert California in the painting, for me, the painting looks off. But if I take Robert California and pull him out and he's just a portrait on the wall, I love that character on its own. So, like, what he adds to the show, I don't like, but I shouldn't say I love that character. I respect that character and I think the character is interesting, but as part of the show, I don't like him. And so that's why I say that it's a really bad opinion. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry, James Spader.
You're not really that sorry.
I'm not that sorry. Sorry, not sorry. Ari say.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. And be sure to follow us over at tall_beats and maybe subscribe over at The Incomparable and become a member. Chat with us in our conference room. And we will be back next week with the episode A Benihana Christmas. I love me some Benihana.
I just want some, what is it?
Nagasaki's.
Nagasaki, ooh, thank you.
Wait, if we're recording next week, we need to be drinking Nagasaki's while we record.
I am so
can
down.
Can you do that?
Oh, I can totally do that.
All right. It's Nog season, so it's perfect timing for this. It's I'll now or never.
I'll go get my lactose-free eggnog and some sake, and it'll be great.
Nagasaki's.